I made a presentation last year about an idea for some software that I felt had a reason to exist. I wanted to make some creative clothing and sculpture with fabric, but I didn't want to have to buy expensive pattern making software, and I thought, well, I'll just make my own, because I could see how they were doing it, but I didn't want to spend thousands of dollars. So, let's see. This is now a year since I made that first proposal. And, you know, my background is in computer networking. You know, I could pick that stuff up last night and haul it into the kitchen, because I've been hauling Cisco and Foundry routers for 2 decades. So, and pulling cable. But I also learned how to sew for my mother and grandmother. And so I just had this idea. And I had talked to my husband about it, and he talked to John. And they had, obviously, beer. It says so. And so I came to you guys to talk about it. And I wanted to be part of the open source world. Since I didn't like the pricing of the software I was looking at, I thought, well, why have it low price? Let's just make it open source. Let's go for it. And Steve suggested, well, let's go for open file formats as well. You know, that's important. That's equally important as the software itself. So we were also, you know, interested in being part of, you know, not just reclaiming our tools, but reclaiming our earth. Reclaiming our identities as humans, reclaiming our self-sufficiency, and also we want to be able to make clothes. So I came here asking for people who would like to help me develop, help me write programming. Of course, everyone has their job, and they have their open source project. So I realized if this was going to get done, I was going to have to do it. So, but a lot of people got it. A lot of people really understood what it was that I was asking for. So after my presentation, I had a lot of people come up and suggest various ways in which we could accomplish this goal. And one of them, you know, Doug Shepherds and John and a few other people said, you have to do this in SVG. This really, I think, is the way to express and shape these patterns and then make them, you know, respond to a customer's measurements. And I've been a little active on the Create list, which helped keep me going through the year. So during the year, I taught myself Python. I learned some Inkscape. I talked to a lot of people that I've never met before and bugged them with email, please help me. And I realized, I really have to get so deep into this stuff, because as we say, there's not enough developers to go around for our projects. So along the way, as I was learning how to do this, I thought, I can teach other people how to do this too. So if we want to have our open source projects, maybe we need to create our own programmers. Get these kids in high school, get them an application, a real world application to work on. Get them some open source operating system, open source programming tools, you know, and a real world problem to solve that has some aesthetics to it, something they can relate to. So I'm in the middle of putting together a 501c3 program to teach Python through pattern design. So I had this background. You know, learning to program with punch cards, because I'm sure I've told every single one of you about it. So I'm very procedural, you know. And I got it working, it was really great, but there were the code was massive. So I handed it off to Steve in November, and he converted it into object-oriented functions and separated out the engine from the design, which is what we wanted in the first place, so that I, as a designer, can make a file. There's a formula of my design, and then shove it through an open source engine and come out with the design that belongs to me. But the open source engine is open to all. You know, it's like Inkscape. You know, you make your design, that's yours. You sell it to your customer or you enjoy it yourself, whatever. But it is yours. It belongs to you. So we were able to abstract the engine, the data, we're trying to come up with licensing modes so that everyone understands that a person's file, the formula, is their property. You know, if they wish, they can sign it over to, you know, Creative Commons or something if they want to. But if they wish to, they can keep it as their proprietary. So everything that we've done has been written in Python, and my husband added PySVG, and that's a project that had kind of lain dormant for a while. And since Steve's been talking to the guy that does SVG, it's sort of getting a little more polish to it at the moment. I'm not sure how much change is happening, but there's some dialogue there, so that might be revived. Because it really, at its base, is its definition, it's a really good package, it's a nice library. We're storing the data at the moment in just a flat JSON file. And that should be converted into a full-blown database in the future. We've converted it so that the data and the pattern structure are hierarchical items. You have your client, and then you have all their measurements underneath the client object. And then you have the pattern object, and you have, like a jacket, and then jacket front, jacket back, jacket sleeves, and then seams underneath that. And so it's all... And when you look at the code, if you look at the XML of the SVG document, everything is given an appropriate ID as well, so that you can go and find a certain spot and make change. It's not, we don't allow the random IDs that are generated through Inkscape or through Python or through an SVG engine. But as I say, it's really just we're not there yet, still kind of a second stage prototype. But it does look like it's going to work. We're pretty happy about that. We'd like to find 2 part-time developers. There was a guy through OpenHatch who volunteered. They're in, I think, the Netherlands somewhere, and they're into Blender and fashion, and they're in some art school, and they're very excited and young, and I'm like, oh, what do I tell this person to do? So once you get a developer, what do you do with them? So think about that. Yeah, but they seemed very enthusiastic. So I've got to do some software engineering now and actually do some management. So, and the workshop on Saturday was a lot of fun. I've been learning Git, and I submitted the wrong pattern to my Git library. So when I read, updated my Git locally, my repository locally, I pulled the wrong pattern. So anyway, I am learning Git. I left that out earlier. So next year, we're going to really push hard on the nonprofit efforts to get this program into schools. I've been talking to people at University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa, which was hit with tornadoes recently. So I think maybe they're not interested so much in talking about it right now. They have bigger things. I've also been talking to a college in Tennessee, Murfreesboro, Middle Tennessee University. They have a girls in STEM program. Then they are very excited about putting this in place. So I have some mentors and mentor shops really, really interested in getting this going and getting it going quickly. In addition to that, we want to develop the standalone application for, beyond the basics for the STEM program. We want to keep it going to make it more useful to the industry. I think I can find some early adopter designers. There may be some in this room, but I've talked to several others. There's a guy in Australia that makes swimsuit patterns, and some people in Oregon. So I think there are people who are interested in it. And of course, if any of you want to volunteer your body measurements, email them to me. I will use them. And because so far I had one data set, which was mine, So when we changed data sets on Saturday, we sort of had a problem as well. So I need to expand that. I have a little more. I'm going to get into some revelations on how bad a programmer I am. I'll show you the next one is again, gets my stuff. This digital pattern making, I create block. At the moment, most people create their own patterns by creating like a boxy block basic piece, and then they carve it up and rearrange it into different shapes, or they copy an original pattern and just slash and spread to meet their measurements, or they draw using a formula, which is like a traditional tailor approach, where you train from when you're 7 years old and you learn all these different formulas for different types of jackets, different types of pants, and it's a lifetime investment of your brain. It's very difficult to do. You can't, you have to be very smart to do that. And what I'm really aiming at is preserving the tailoring information. It's something that's dying. And I think that if we can just get these formulas into these programs, they won't disappear. There's a lot of information out there. So Taumata Tau Fusica is an attempt to give you the tools to pull, what's in your head through a GUI that has yet to exist, and use these methodologies that my husband and I are creating right now to produce patterns so that you can create your 3D shapes, whether that's garments or sculpture or whatever else that you have in mind. So that's sort of that's what we're into. Right now, using Scape 4.7 and 4.8, this is what I've been using. I've been using the Eric Python IDE, which I love, and Git, which I'm learning. I've made mistakes, but it's great. Now, I'm sure all of you know that when you make an Inkscape extension, the first thing you have to do is write an INX file, which is just a hypertext file. And at the end of it, you tell it which Python file to call. And in it, you can say parameters if you want the user to input information. That's where you put it in the INX file. You also state which menu you wish for your extension to appear off of. So, I'm not sure if you're aware of all that, but I just wanted to tell you that so it can wind up in a video. Maybe someone will see this that doesn't know this information. Extensions can be effects or filters. A filter doesn't actually change the file you're looking at. An effect does. It permanently changes the file. So a TMTP extension is considered an extension, and it should show up in your extension menu. And SVG documents are also text files written in XML. And when you create an SVG file in Inkscape, it automatically adds, if you're learning SVG, you learn all this other stuff. It's got to have it's very picky. It's got to be precisely the standard, or it can't be read by an SVG engine. So you have to have the right header data. You have to have the right versions. You have to include the correct pointers to the data, data dictionaries, whatever. So all of this is added by Inkscape. So pushing this through Inkscape is sort of an easy way to get all that into your file. So you don't have to. So your Python file doesn't have to write all of that itself. So there are some good tutorials on this. Of course, obviously, on the Inkscape wiki. And also the SVG commands at w3.org. Those are great places to get information. But I knew nothing about Python. So I understand that variables are really easy with Python. You just write the variable name, and you give it a value, and then the variable exists, and it has a type. Now, you can't say age is 12, and then age is a character 12, and then age is a float. You can only do it once. You can only define a variable once. So it can be, it's any one of these three, but you can't, once you give it a value, then it has a type, and you can't give it a different type. So that's important. Objects in Python are complex. They can hold the simple variables. They can hold other complex objects. Now, this is what I call the magic init. That when you create an object, you call, you define, you know, you make a call to this magic init in Python, and it creates the object, and it also adds some default functions to it, one of which is the affect function, which causes the program to execute. So I knew nothing of this, and there's very little documentation on this part of it. So it's the magic init. Some object examples. This is my favorite, the generic. I can do anything I want to with that. I just create an object. I have a function, a definition, def init, self, so it can refer to itself as self within that class, and then return. It has no default values, no default variables, nothing. It's just a variable that can hold anything. But here's sort of a dumb example. And again, I'm trying to make it at a level maybe a seventh grade girl could relate to. So we're going to make some Snow Whites. We have class create Snow White, right? No parameters passed in. Nothing, doesn't need anything. So we define a function, and we call the magic init with self. Why, we don't know. Just that's what we do. And then self.hair. Oh, Snow White has black hair. Her skirt is yellow, and she's about 15 and a half, right? Something like that. And then return. So this is all it takes to create Snow White at the moment. So in our program, we have Snow 1. We want to create Snow 1. So we call create Snow White. So we create an object. Oh, let's create another one, Snow 2. We call create Snow White. We have two Snow Whites, different names. We can just add variables if we want to. We can tack it on there. It's just an object. Snow 1. She has a sport that she likes, and it's lacrosse. Snow 2 doesn't like sports. She likes video games. Her favorite one is Lord of the Rings. Snow 2 also has a baby. She's a little young, but she's got a baby. And it's a baby boy. So we're going to create a baby boy. Here's the class. Create boy child. It's have the function, a definition of init to create a class, an object, and the gender is a male. It's a boy. It's just a baby and a boy. We don't know its name, nothing. So, okay, the babies, we're going to tack on just a plain variable, and it's Govinder. It's the boy's name. So, in my program, this is what I do. I use the generic a lot, so if I have a starting point A and a pattern, I just say A equals generic. And a pattern, pretty much you visualize on an XY grid, just like a video game, X being to the right, Y being down. Say A dot X is 15, A dot Y is 100, and the ID of A is A. So when you get into the SVG of it, you can format your SVG commands with those values. So if you're going to create a rectangle in Python, you define something called draw rectangle, and you say self, okay, because you're within Python, you have to tell it to act on within your global within your context that you're in at the moment. And then my layer. In Inkscape, you're always in a layer, so and you can have define different layers to write something to. An X, a Y, a name, a line color, a fill color, a line width, and then how wide and how high. So you define these dictionaries. So my style, and I'm trying to write this with to make it obvious that this is a variable that I've named. A lot of the resources that I've looked like, it'll say style equal all of this, and attributes equal this. Well, if you give the variable the same name as what it's supposed to be, it's a little confusing. So I just want to make sure that you know that my style is a variable name that I made up. I could have called it George. But my style, it, and then I define within brackets the stroke value, the stroke, and it refers to the parameter, the stroke width, and it refers to the line width. And obviously, line width is going to be a number because I have to convert it to a string. SVG is all text. It's 100% text. All variables, all parameters that you pass to it have to be text. So you convert all numbers to string. And then there's a fill and a fill color. Now there's an attributes aspect of this to create an SVG command. And the attributes, you know, the style is more like CSS styles, right? Sort of look and feel, aesthetics. The attributes are the values that actually create the shape, the center of the object, and where you're going to start, how wide it's going to be, what the radius will be, things like that. So, and also the ID name. And this is, I've paid a lot of attention to the naming in my program so that you can look at it, know where you are. If you have a problem, you can go back and fix it easily. So name, and then again, X will be a string X. Y, even the parameters are strings. The Y value for this rectangle, where it starts, is a string of the Y that's passed in. The width is string of the width value. And the height is string of the height. And there's this style variable, style parameter. And it uses the library of simple style to format with its command, format style on my style. That's a little confusing, but it takes this dictionary that you've defined, my style, with all the CSS values, and wraps it up inside the attribute string. And then inkx utilizes this E-tree engine to create elements. So inkx E-tree sub-element, and then you tell it which layer from your parameter. And then the inkx, again, with its command, add a new sub-element. And, oh, it says rectangle, half circle. That's my programming. So anyway, that should say rectangle, SVG, and then my attribs. And then my attribs is this dictionary here that has rolled up in another format the style. So everything there is rolled up to create a new sub-element for a rectangle. So in my program, if AX and AY are 100 and 200, and the ID is A, then self, draw a rectangle, will add a rectangle to my canvas, to my drawing. And my base layer is what I'm calling, just, I don't have a special layer at the moment, just the base layer, and then A.X, A.Y, and as you see, those are numbers. So convert it to string up there. And A.ID, which is string, because it would be converted. And then green will be the line color, the stroke. Orange will be the fill. 7 is the line width, 75 pixels. If you don't specify anything else, it's pixels by default. 75 wide and 50 high. So that's what you have to go through in Python to generate an object. And within the SVG file, it looks like this. This tag, this hypertext file, rect ID equals A, X is 100, Y is 200, width 75, height, fill, stroke, and stroke width. Slash. So that's kind of where you have to go to get here. But, you know, it's really worth it because we get so much the total control of creating a pattern so that it can be manipulated through user parameters is really cool, and it's been worth this effort. As I said, the Inkscape extension files are INX, and these tags are meaningful to Inkscape. User inputs are declared as parameters. You state where your menu goes, and you state which Python file to call. Now, I've got an example to show you, if we have time. Probably not, but if you want to see my code, I can show it to you now, or I can shut down the talk and we can... All right. Okie doke. And I really do like Eric, this Python IDE. Trying to get it to be visible. All right. Let me pull up the INX file first. Oops. Where is it? Okay, this is all it is. You just say, okay, this is an Inkscape extension. This is the first tag. And then you give it a name. You can call it anything you want to. But that's the name that shows up in the menu. Front bodice. And here's another ID. tmtp.frontbodice. Now, this ID can show up in, you know, listing of extensions for Inkscape, right? I could call it tmtp.susan.test.frontbodice.whatever. But and that's purely up to you. It's not meaningful, but if you want to see your things listed in Inkscape extensions in a proper way or an organized way, you'll have some organization of your extension ID. So this is an executable. We want this to be located in the extensions directory. Like in Linux, it's in your off your home folder. It's /.config/. Inkscape/extensions, and on Windows, I'm not sure. But so we're dependent on Inkex and Simple Transform. So we need those. But those are fortunately installed with Python now. And here are the parameters that I've defined that we need for this program. And some of these I'm not using, but they're still defined here. I don't want to take them out. There's a neck circumference, shoulder width, front armpit distance. Back armpit distance, bust circumference, bust point distance, bust length, front bodice length, back bodice length, waist circumference. You see, all of these are floats. The min is 1.0, max is 1,000. Now, this didn't want to leave anybody out. So you have an upper hip circumference, a lower hip circumference, and a side seam length, which is just from your armpit to your waist. And then you can put in some help.
What units are you using? Metric? Or
At the moment, I think I'm using inches. I've played a lot, so I have a lot of these different things going on. I have one where the parameters, where I have an option, parameter option, to select centimeters or inches. But this is not one of those. This is just a really simple one. So we finished. We've declared our dependencies. We've declared any parameters we want the user to put in. And so now we start saying, this is an effect. This is not a filter. It's an effect. And object type all, I don't know what that is. But I should find out. But I know it has to be there. It's going to go in the effects menu and the submenu name. So when you click on the effects and you go down the list of options, there's going to be a submenu name called mine. And then /effects. So you've told it which menu it's going to go in. So that's the end of that tag section. Now script. Here's where something gets called. The command, the relative directory, is the extensions, as I told you, that's like slash your home directory .config Inkscape extensions. So that's what that means. And then the interpreter is going to be Python. I mean, you could have Perl or some other program, but this one's Python. And this is the file to call, frontbodice.py, in command, and then in script. That's all an INX file is. Now then, the actual Python file, you know, you kind of want to say who did it, when, and why, and where it's called from. I'm pretty basic about that. I know some people are a little more, you know, casual on this score, but I want to put as much information out there as possible in case I lose it and someone else finds it, they can return it. No, I just like it. This is my first attempt at creating an SVG drawing from an Inkscape extension using Python. I make it public because it's a good example of beginning-level Python programming. And because we're using Inkscape, we don't have to fool with I.O. You know, input-output is a real major pain for beginning programmers. And you get immediate response. Of course, you get this from processing JS, as Pete was saying earlier, but this is how you do it with Python. There's just some things you want to do. You want to make sure that your Inkscape extension, where your Inkscape program is stored, the extensions that come with Inkscape, you want to specify that directory. You also want to specify the directory where your personal extensions are stored. So, you know, this dot here means that it's off of your home directory, hopefully. And here are two dependencies, inkx and simple style. And here's my class generic that I love. So I'd do anything with that. And now I'm starting the class draw front lattice. Let me roll this down. Okay, I just wasn't able to get to the scroll bar. This is fine. Okay, well, is this up? Can you see? Is this good?
Yeah.
All right, good. We haven't cut anything off from the left hand side. All right, so we now have that class generic. And now, it looks a little funky. But the first thing, you know, I'm defining my class draw front lattice, and I want to make the inkx effect an integral part of this so that I don't have to refer to it all the time. I can just refer to the functions that are available in it. There's our magic init, inkx effect. Well, we have a function init, and then we use the inkx effect init to create an Inkscape object, which is your canvas. And I'm assuming that it uses your default template to do this here. And I've looked at the code, and I don't see any way to create a new Inkscape document using anything other than the default template. If any of you know how to do that, I would love to know. One of the things that's available through Inkx is this option parser. You know, once you create the document, you know, there are some default things that are added to it. This object option parser is part of that document. So the self, this document that we've just created, has this this option parser automatically added to it, and it has a function added to it called add option. So we are line by line adding the parameters that we had specified in our INX file, right? Neck circumference, shoulder width, front armpit distance, all that stuff. And so you have to parse this in. This is an important step. You can't skip it. To pull your parameters in from your INX file into your Python environment. Okay, that being done, I have another function that I love, which is debug. So that if any point in my program is not really working, I can shove this debug statement there and say, okay, show me point A, or give me the, and I can even look at values in the SVG document in the DOM level or CSS level, which is, and it's very, very useful, but it is calling a Linux statement, the sys.standardError.write, and then the string of the message, and then a carriage return. So, but that is an essential for me because I make a lot of mistakes. I have to do a lot of debugging. So here's the first thing, draw my line. And again, I'm calling my functions very simple, silly names to let people know, to let seventh and eighth grade girls know that this is that this didn't come with the program. I made this up. Draw my line. And here are my parameters, very similar to the ones in our previous slides. It's referring to that this can be applied to ourself, our current context. My layer, whatever layer I tell it to draw to. Couple x, you know, point one, x1, y1, point two, x2, y2, color, my width, my label. And so here's my style dictionary. Here's my attributes dictionary with ID, and we're going to add a new. Here we're adding another Inkscape variable called label. So you not only get the SVG ID, you get an Inkscape label, and that can show up in your XML editor if you're looking at your XML editor in Inkscape. But the Inkscape label won't make it over into your SVG document because it's SVG doesn't care about Inkscape stuff. But then again, I'm continuing on with the actual values required to draw a line. The first point, x1 and y1. The second point, x2, y2. And then the style is a roll-up of formatting of that my style dictionary. And so here's the command, inkxe true sub-element, my layer, add this new sub-element. It's a line. It's an SVG type. And use all these parameters. So here's another, draw my dot, very similar, and it's for circles. And I use dots to mark points like, center of my, Napier. And also I use dots to mark the control points for Bezier curves, like around your armhole. So those all go in a reference layer. They don't become part of the pattern. So I have a reference layer and a pattern layer, obviously. And here's a simple one. Draw my Q curve. Quadratic curve in SVG is takes one control point. So I decided to draw a separate function for a quadratic curve, which only has, did it drop my path def? Oh, I'm passing a path definition to it, and it's parsing it. As pixels, and D is my path definition. I think I called it a draw my Q curve. Okay, up there, it's a little different. I'm specifying the first point, the last point, and the control point. And then I'm creating the path within the function. So the D parameter of SVG is M plus string of X1 plus a common space plus the string of y2, plus a space, and then the q for quadratic in space, and then the string of c1, comma space, string of the control 2, and then the final point where you're trying to get to. So that's, I think I left this in so you could see that, how easy it is, how SVG command strings are very simple, but you got to wrap them up just right. So you create through the sub-element command, my layer inkx with it's now a path. It's not a circle or a rectangle, whatever. It's a path. And use my path attributes, and the path itself is one of the attributes. But here in draw my curve, I'm saying my layer, my path definition. I've already structured the path in the program, and I'm passing that path as a parameter to this particular function, and. So here, the D parameter is just my path definition. Whatever, anything I pass to it is going to turn out to be a path. It can be move to a point and then line to a point and then smooth to some other point and then curve to through two control points and then ending at another point. It can be a very complex path. So this draw my curve can do anything you want, and it can even just be a line. But as long as I structure my path in the proper way, before I pass it to it, then it'll work. It'll create anything. And then draw my dotted line. Now, I did this. This is specific with a particular stroke, no fill, stroke width 5, and give it a label. And here, and my Inkscape labels and my SVG labels are different. I figured this out earlier. I had added a new sub-element in my attributes. Well, I figured out later that you can just put label here in the attributes, and that's going to be your Inkscape label. So I'm just kind of showing, that's why I'm using this as an example, because it has a lot of my mistakes in it, which, you know, you've got to figure these things out. So anyway, you're drawing a dotted line. And the dotted line on a pattern is the seam line, right? So you go from one point, x1, y1, to x2, y2, and the style is rolled up. You know, this, all of these things that I've specified. And then called it with this add new sub-element, and it's a line. It's an SVG line. So it just kind of rolls like that for sort of a long time. There are other things that I've had to do. And draw my cutting curve, that's the cutting line on a pattern is a solid line. And it's a little thicker than everything else, so I've defined it to be that. Now, one of the really silly things I did was refresh my middle school math. So, and I put a lot of comments in here, which I should probably take out. I hope they're correct. But to get coordinates from points, I give it the point on a line, give it another point on this line, and then if I want, you know, the first line, that's first point, second point, or first point, second point, but I want to extend this line out from the first point. So if the first point's here, the second point's here, then I'm going to go in this direction. If the first point's here, the second point's here, then I'm going in that direction. So I have the 2 points defined and a distance. It's kind of dumb, but as I said, I'm kind of showing you where I started from. And so you have to find the slope. And I'm calling it a circle radius formula, but it's, you know, it's the a squared, b squared, c squared thing. So that you have to figure out. So m is get my slope. Obviously, I've got to get my slope function defined in here. And I'm setting it the 2 points. And normal, because, I mean, I did some really silly stuff here. I said, okay, normal means don't put it at an angle. Just continue the slope.
I'll put that perhaps a question.
Anyway, r is my length. So anyway, yes.
So I just want to make a quick comment. What you seem to be doing of recording the actual practices of expert clothes makers and translating it into code or formulas,
yes,
is extremely similar to what Donald Knuth, I'm sorry if I mispronounce his name, I just read, Don Knuth, the maker of Tech, which is spelled T-E-X.
Yes.
You are aware of this?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, so this process seems to be the same?
It's very similar.
Yes. And
only Donald Knuth used 2.5 as his value for centimeters.
He's also the inventor of a measurement system, so yeah, I think he can be forgiven for a great many sins. Thank you.
But yes,
any other?
He's big influence.
You're making tech for clothing.
That's a good observation.
Just a request rather than a question. We've seen a lot of the code, and I want to know if we can see a demo of it working inside Inkscape.
We'll do it. Okay. But I just want to let you know at what level we're working at here. So I did all this, crunched it out in middle school desktop style. And this is what I was able to achieve.
We're of course a bit running overboard, but
I'll do the one example and I'll be done. I'll run it.
It's as you wish. I find that interesting, but
whatever you guys want to do, I don't care. He never does. Okay, here's my, it says mine, and here's all my, it doesn't include the entire string. I have dates and versions and stuff sticking off here. But the one that works that I want to show you is this one. And those are some measurements. Don't look at them. Okay, so I can, let me go ahead and just do an outset here. I can choose a path and do an outset because I've drawn one line on top of the other. I had both lines here, the dotted line underneath, the solid line on top. So I went and selected the line and did the control right paren to create an outset. And so my outset has been previously defined to be the width of a seam allowance. So that path jumped out 5/8 of an inch all the way around. So let me show you, let me resize the document to fit the picture. And now let's, did it do it? I guess it did. Let's zoom out. Okay, so that's a front bodice block. It's very, very simple. And all those functions that I was showing you that I'd written, we cleaned those up, pulled them out, and created our own library to make it easy. So each pattern, you don't have to go through that. You just write your formulas. If when I want to print this, just go to layers, find my reference layer, hide it, print it. And if I have a problem, let me go ahead and show that again. If I have a problem, I can go into the XML editor and say, all right, see, some things have escape labels, some don't. Like this didn't have it. But see, you can go in and kind of look at that path, and it's huge, so you're not going to get any information out of it. So if what you do is like pick a point that you find that you think there's a problem with. Now that's the control point for the neckline, for the quadratic curve that forms the front neckline. I want it to be in a different place. Then I can go and say, or if I'm confused as to what point that is, I can go in, select the point, go into the XML editor that's already highlighted, and it'll tell me what the ID is on that.
Quick question. How do you print out your patterns?
I have a big plotter at home. I found it at a technology recycling center for about $75. It's an HP 755CM.
Because I have a funny feeling my wife would be very interested in this.
I'm trying to talk to printer companies to just make a black and white basic plotter that, mine's 36 inch wide and it's a roll feed. But all you need is black. You don't need the color.
Imagine even getting like a plotter that could have like a small chalk on it so you could actually plot on textiles.
Oh, yeah. See, I want that to be part of the program, too. You do. Now, here's the thing. You can spend $250,000 for the Lexmark or Gerber fashion design stuff, and then that gets sent over to the, $2 million layout program to show you how it's supposed to be laid out on the cloth, and then that gets sent over to the, $2 million cutting machine. Now, it'd be great if we could have all this in open source, because not everybody wants to make so many clothes that it goes to H&M and to, all these different department stores all over the world. Maybe they just want to make enough clothes for their neighborhood or for their city or for a few stores in the state. Yes.
I just wanted to say one of the other functional models for this, too, is like the open clip art. And imagine a situation where you create a pattern, you upload it, someone downloads it wherever they are, prints it out, and then just stitches it right up. I mean, that's sort of the vision that I saw in this particular case.
Yeah.
Since I was just starting out on like why you don't need a plotter, another thing you can use if you just calibrate this and you can do it like by a little bit of practice is use a projector and then just trace it straight on the textile.
Lots of people do that with these old patterns. They get their projector, put it up on the wall, and draw it out. And then they pull it into Inkscape and straighten up the lines, and have a ruler, as we saw was it Tom's presentation?
Layout, yeah.
Yeah, the layout where you have the rulers to mark it, so you know what your reference is. But yeah, there's a lot to this. What I want is a website for people to put their patterns up there, and client can log in, enter their database, their measurements, and then from this database, they can pick and choose what patterns they want. They can download that pattern right then. They can click over to whatever fabric you know, vendor that we like or that they like. We have some links, and they can pick out they can order the amount of fabric that's needed to make that pattern and all the notions and stuff and have all that shipped to them. Or they can pick the pattern, pick the material, pick all the stuff, pick a seamster to sew it and have it shipped to them ready-made. A lot of things. Yes.
That's cool. Really cool. I'm curious, like, it seems like there's a lot of stuff happening, so I'm curious where it's directed, like where people could get involved, you know? Like there's there are obviously these things happening, but is there a place for where the code's at directed effort?
We pretty much came up with a final second version about 3 weeks ago, and then we got hit with tornadoes and things, so we didn't get a chance to post it. But I will put that information on the create list and make it known where to download the code. Okay. Okay. Oh, yeah, there's a sobrilliant.org site, so-brilliant. That was the name of my stitch lounge that I had in Huntsville for a couple of years. So I shut it down and started doing this. So I have about 12 really old but great sewing machines. If you want one, let me know. Because I have 12. So I need to get rid of them. Anything else?
There's still two talks before lunchtime. Sorry. It's for us to vote. What do we do? It's actually quite interesting, obviously. Everyone is into it. Shall we do the two other talks also? Thank you. Thank you very much.